This is Fresh Air. For 25 years, Terry Phelps's life was structured around the basketball season. For about 20 of those years, her husband, Digger Phelps, was the basketball coach at Notre Dame. Terry Phelps says coaches' wives are expected to attend all the games, smile all the time, cheer the team on, even bake for them. But she was determined to be more than the stereotype of the coach's wife. Shortly after arriving at Notre Dame, she became one of the university's first female students. After graduate school, she joined the law faculty, where she's now a tenured professor. She's written a new memoir called The Coach's Wife. She says that even though the coach's wife has a lot of duties she's expected to perform, she's always an outsider. That became apparent to her on the day of her husband's first press conference at Notre Dame.
So we arrived in town. My husband had just had a fantastically successful year at Fordham University, and he was hot property. And he was offered the head coaching job at University of Notre Dame. So we went out there. Before we went, I bought a new blue and gold dress, the blue and gold Notre Dame's colors, thinking, well, I'm going to be at his side at the press conference. All these images of women at men's sides that I had seen through my childhood and adolescence. And I arrived at breakfast. The first day we were on campus, I discovered that I had been set up with a real estate woman to look at houses during the day, and that I was not expected, in fact, not permitted to go to the press conference. Women didn't go to press conferences about men getting coaching jobs. That was a male domain. That was male space. So off I went to look for houses. I remember being disappointed, but certainly not the kind of person then who could speak up and say, I don't care, I'm going to the press conference.
Your book, which is a memoir, actually started out more as a survey of what the wives of athletes and coaches experienced. And you decided to make the book more personal. But you did a lot of those surveys, and you got a lot of responses back. What were some of the problems that women had in common?
All coaches' wives that I surveyed spoke about the lack of privacy that they felt in their lives because of their husbands' jobs, the intense pressure all the time. Your destiny seems so hinged on whether a team won or lost. Problems making friends, not knowing who real friends were, because people attach themselves to coaches and to athletic teams as long as they're successful, and sometimes these people disappear when the team starts to lose. Little time with your husband, and the husband having little time with a wife or with his family. Those four things in particular, I'd say.
When you got married, you write, you took your husband's name, you took his identity, even his religion, you converted from Protestant to Catholic.
Right.
But pretty early on after you got to Notre Dame, you started carving out your own identity. The year that Notre Dame was open to women, in 1972, you went back to school, and then you ended up teaching literature and writing at the Notre Dame Law School. What was the public reaction when you decided to go to college at Notre Dame and then eventually started teaching there?
People in the community and at Notre Dame were shocked that I had stepped outside of my prescribed role as a coach's wife. I didn't hear too much of it directly, but we heard rumor after rumor after rumor about how Terry's gone back to school, so Digger has to take the children to the office, or he has to do the grocery shopping. And then people in a town such as South Bend, a place such as Notre Dame, they begin to attribute the team's success to, or lack of success, to the fact that I wasn't being supportive enough.
Was your husband supportive of you going back to school?
He was supportive. He was threatened by it, to be sure, and we struggled. He was raised in a very traditional family. He expected, although he never articulated this, he expected he'd have a wife a lot like his mother, who was at home all the time for him. And it was not easy at all. But at no time did he say, I don't want you to do this. And as it progressed and he saw how much it meant to me and I was good at it and it was right for me to be doing it, he became very supportive.
Do you like basketball, and how much did you enjoy all the games that you went to over the years?
I liked it in the beginning. I think that may have been part of our relationship, that I enjoyed, when we were dating, I enjoyed going to games with my soon-to-be husband. But as I became more involved in it, when it became a job and that you couldn't afford to lose or there would be nasty letters in the paper about your husband, the fun went out of it entirely for me. And I began to dislike it entirely.
Did you start to dislike the fans because if things were going well, they'd be great, they'd be there for you, but if things weren't going well, there'd be booze for your husband?
Yes, indeed. It is extremely painful to stand in a packed arena and listen to people booing your husband. And what are the choices? Do I not go to the games? And the one person who should be there for him isn't. Or do I go, as I tried to most of the time, and just stand there listening and trying to smile through it and trying to pretend that everything is all right? It's very difficult and very painful.
During a tough game when things weren't going well and there were boos for the team or for your husband, would you be able to tell if the camera was on you?
I tried to hide from the cameras. If producers came and asked where I was sitting, I asked people not to tell them because I felt that was a terrible invasion of privacy. And you do see this all the time now in big games, that the camera will go to the wife in the final seconds of a very close and very important game. And her face shows incredible anguish. And I felt that that was an invasion of privacy. And I think that it is. I think the wives should be left alone. Unless they explicitly say, I enjoy this and sure, put the camera on me, that they should be left alone.
Terry Phelps is my guest. Her new memoir, The Coach's Wife, is about the years her husband, Digger Phelps, was the coach of basketball at Notre Dame. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Terry Phelps, author of the memoir, The Coach's Wife. College basketball changed a lot in the 25 years that your husband coached. And recruiting practices changed. The whole idea of the student athlete started to change. In 1982, your husband spoke out about recruiting practices. And in your book, you write about what you call the hidden obstacles of recruiting at Notre Dame. What were some of those obstacles you're talking about?
Well, at Notre Dame in particular, recruiting for basketball is tricky business because it is seen by high school athletes as a football school. So first of all, you're dealing with young men with huge egos who want to be the most important people on campus when they go to school, perhaps not willing to go to a place where they're going to be playing for the secondary sport. Notre Dame also has tough academic requirements. Notre Dame requires 3 years of high school math to get in. Now, that may not sound like a huge requirement to most people, but of the top 100 recruits in high school this year for basketball, a safe bet would be that 85 of them do not have 3 years of high school math. Other schools require 3 years of high school math to get in their universities if you're a regular student, but they waive the requirement for athletes, and Notre Dame did not do that. Now, I have no problems with these academic requirements. The only problem I have is when people forget that there are those requirements and expect the coach to win at the same level as teams that completely waive all kinds of academic requirements for the athletes.
Because if you have these rigorous standards, it puts you at a competitive disadvantage when it comes to recruiting.
It does. Once in a while, a Bill Bradley and a Princeton will go to the Final Four. But teams like that appear once or twice in a decade. They're not going to have 25-game winning seasons every single year. And fans don't seem to be willing to accept that. Fans want it both ways. I suspect that wanting it both ways and two very conflicting things, big-time sports winning all the time and yet good academic, high academic standards, are the pressures that are making coaches act a little bit crazy this year.
As NCAA regulations became more complicated, regulations defining the relationship between a coach and the recruits and a coach and the team, how did that change the relationship that you and your husband had to the players, the recruits, and their parents?
The rules got so complicated. The rules all arose from situations that needed some kind of control, but then typical lawmaking, that the law covers or the rule covers much more than that it's intended to. For example, a rule as to how you could entertain the players or entertain the players' parents came into force. So you couldn't, if we made friends with the players' parents and went out to have pizza after a game, we would have to be absolutely certain that they paid for their exact portion of the bill. We were in danger even if we split the bill for fear that we had paid for a little bit of their portion, and that would be a technical violation of an NCAA rule. One story I tell in the book is when one of our star players, David Rivers, was hurt and badly hurt in an automobile accident. And David came from a big family in Jersey City, New Jersey, and they did not have very much money. And my husband had to call them in the middle of the night to tell them of David's accident. And they had to drive from Jersey City to Indiana to see David in the hospital because I just didn't have money for plane tickets, and we weren't allowed. We, the university, or we personally would have probably done it, but that is not allowed, or was at least at that time not allowed under the NCAA rules.
In 1991, your husband, Digger Phelps, was asked by the new administration at Notre Dame to resign. They were unhappy with his record?
I'm not sure. It's a bit mysterious to me, even now, exactly what they didn't like about his coaching or about the way he was handling the program. What they said was he wasn't winning enough. They didn't like his style of play. He had graduated 100% of the athletes who had played for him in 20 years. So they had nothing bad to say about that, the academic side of it. And also, he had won an average of 20 or more games every year, and had gone to 14 NCAA tournaments. So it was a bit odd and shocking and surprising, as I relate in the book, that I was shocked when it happened. I never thought for a moment that he would be asked to leave as coach. And it was a difficult year for us to get through that and to try to my struggle to try and understand what was happening and why was this place that I cared for so much and had come to believe in, that had values and talked about family and indeed had a family kind of atmosphere, why suddenly we were outside the family in some significant way.
You reprint a memo in your book that was sent to your husband by the administration, basically offering him the chance to resign, but letting him know if he didn't resign that they would just release him. And then you had to decide whether he should resign or not, or let himself get fired. And he decided to go the resignation route and, in fact, to not let on publicly what was happening behind the scenes. What kind of talks did you have about this, you know, privately, you and your husband, about how to handle this and which way to go?
During that year, when the university first told him that he would be coaching for his last year the next year, I wanted him to fight it, and I think he thought that way at first. I thought there's no way that they can do this. The public relations aspect of it would be too bad. I wanted him to confront them and go head to head. I'm a fighter, and I talk in the book about being a fighter pilot's daughter and having that kind of notion of fighting things and going down and burning planes. But through the year, I saw what the situation was doing to him, that he was beaten down by it. All kinds of decision-making was taken out of his hands. The scheduling had been taken out of his hands for a couple of years. They wanted to take recruiting decisions out of his hands. And those are crucial areas that a coach needs to have control over. And he was getting beaten down by it. And the part of him that believed that his team could beat anyone, the kind of boyish exuberance about the game, was beginning to diminish. And when I began to see that, I began to realize that maybe fighting this was not the right thing to do. He came to that decision himself. And he left without a single moment of bitterness about Notre Dame itself. I think he felt disappointed and certainly pained by the way that the administration had treated him, but his love for Notre Dame never faltered for a moment.
How has your life and also your personal sense of identity changed now that you no longer have to play the role of coach's wife?
It's a great relief. I can wake up mornings in the winter during basketball season. I have no knots in my stomach because a big game is coming up. Life is much, much calmer. and there is no pressure. And I am much happier. And I think my husband is too. He is experiencing what it is like. He coached the whole time we were married. That's all we knew. And now we have a lot more time together and a lot less pressure in our lives. There seems to be a better quality to our lives.
He probably misses the game a lot, though.
Well, he still is involved as a color commentator for ESPN. So now he gets to coach all the teams and have all the players. And he's loving that. He's liking it a lot more than he anticipated. There are some things about coaching that he misses. He loved the strategy. He loved working with the kids. But there are other aspects to coaching, like the pressure, like the constant demands, the unspoken demands to sacrifice academics for winning, that he doesn't miss at all. And that aren't worked out in college sports, aren't solved for coaches. And that will happen, I think, in the next 10 years. But he doesn't miss that part of it at all.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
I've enjoyed it.
Terry Phelps' new memoir is called The Coach's Wife. This is Fresh Air.